This week is Parshas Miketz, and the Parsha actually has a number of different pieces of narrative. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through them, and I'll try to highlight when we're skipping in the Netziv to the next piece. It begins essentially just telling us about that Paro's in the middle of a dream, and the Torah describes for us how there are seven cows, seven fat cows and seven skinny cows. I'm not using the details of the Torah, of course, but that's just the way it is. And then how the skinny ones eat the fat ones. It doesn't say, there's no commentary about what the cows look like. That Paro says later when he tells over the dreams to Yosef. And then a similar thing happens with the seven stalks, which come out of a kone echad, one larger, main stalk, and how they consume a similar kind of dried out stalk that looks like it. So the first thing that you should know is when Paro says, look at Pasuk Dalet, "Vatochalna haparos ra'osam areva dakos ha'pasar is sheva paros." It doesn't say, the Netziv points out, he says it doesn't say that the seven skinny cows ate the fat cows. It just says "Vatochalna haparos." So this is the first. A lot of these things I'm not going to read inside. I'm just going to kind of tell you what he says. But the first thing that he says is that only two cows ate them. As paros, paros means it's plural, and why? Because we know that when did the brothers show up? After 2 years of famine, and so therefore he's just giving an indicator that two things that really only ended up being two years of famine. And if you look at the end of the second line, so Yaakov is coming helped. It's not that the famine ended, but that it wasn't as bad. Okay, well, what does that mean? So were things growing again? I mean, we see what happens at the end of Parshas Vayigash when Yosef essentially owns all of Egypt on behalf of Paro. And the only reason why that would happen is if the famine does continue. So I'm not entirely sure, you know, what all that means in the scheme of things, but just it's an interesting insight. But Tochano haparos, and it doesn't say that it was the seven paros which consumed. So the Netziv jumps on that, and the truth is that the same thing happens in Pasuk Zayin. But Tivlana hashibalim adakos is sheva hashibalim. It doesn't mention that seven do it. It just says that they do it. Okay, in Pasuk Hey the. Which describes the grains coming up out of one. So he points out that the sova, that the plenty will only be in Egypt, which is not the case for the weaker stalks, which is going to be famine everywhere. So that's why it comes out from one spot and it spreads, and that's another piece which is indicated. Now it's interesting, and this is also something that the Netziv talks about. We're not going to look into it, but I'm just drawing to your attention that Paro's dream has many more details than Yosef interprets for him, and this is just a great example of it, where in the dream Paro sees that there's one kone and it spreads out. Yosef doesn't tell him that the famine is going to be everywhere. He just says this is what's going to be in Egypt. Okay, now maybe does he say that it's going to be all over the place and everybody's going to what does he say to him? Sava gadol b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, that there's going to be plenty in the lands of Egypt. He doesn't really mention what's going to be. Yeah, I mean, he keeps on talking about Egypt. He doesn't mention about anything which is going to go further out. And that could play. I mean, look, the truth is he doesn't have the job yet. We know that that's Yosef's end goal. But maybe it's because Yosef, wants to see how things are going to play out. He interprets the dreams. And he did the same thing last week with Sar Mashkim to Sar Ofim, where he interpreted their dreams but only gave them the information that they needed, which is why the Netziv mentioned to us, and others also say, that there were hints in these dreams for Yosef as well, which he got from it. Mm-hmm. Okay, pasuk ches, vayihi baboker vatipoyim ruchov vayishlach vayikras kol chatumim mitzrayim kol chachamei vayisaper paro lehem as chalomo vayim oseros on paro. So Paro, we saw, had how many dreams, folks?
Two.
What does it say? Paro told over
one dream.
His one dreams, and it says Paro you know, he was disturbed because he you know, and a lot of the commentaries also make this point that Paro had dreamt the interpretation, and he just needed somebody to remind him of it because he forgot it when he woke up, which is why all of their interpretations he rejected until Yosef came along and he goes, boom. So what did Paro know? That his dream was one dream. He told it to two, he told two dreams, and everybody was saying, ah, this dream means this one, and this one means this one, and this, and Yosef comes along and says, Chalom Paro Echad Hu. And Paro's like, okay, this guy's good. He knows what I know, and that's the point which he makes. And Yosef explains in his interpretation why Paro woke up in between them. Like, in other words, why it was shown to him twice. Yosef says to him, Kimim Aher Elohim, right, last or so, that God's making it, it's going to start right away, and that's the point. But Paro again did not do that. Now, so the next thing that happens, so now again we're going in the transition to the Netziv. So Paro has the dream. He wakes up, and who tells him about Yosef? Is the Sar HaMashkim? Okay, so that's where we are. Now take a look at the way he describes him. Page 224. Now, if you remember last week, so it's actually the opposite. It's actually the opposite. So I mean, at least in the, so I. Okay, hold on. Don't jump ahead. Okay, so we saw with Ashes Potifar that the way that she describes Yosef's, you know, doings, of course, which she made up to her husband, was anti-Semitism 101. So now, the Netziv's interpretation is actually the opposite of anti-Semitism 101. And so the question is, where is the Sar HaMashkim coming from in the way that he describes Yosef? Because once you see the way the Netziv explains it, you're going to be like, so is this the Netziv saying that the Sar HaMashkim was being mean? Or is this saying that the Sar HaMashkim was actually being really kind? Okay, so look at the things that he says. V'shami tanu na'ar ivri. So there's this Hebrew, you know, young youth, right? He's a slave to the Sar HaTabachim, the chief butcher. So we told him, he interpreted for us, each for each one. Right? And so however it came out was correct. Look at what the Netziv says. Okay, skipping to the middle of the first line. Shehu na'ar v'lo lamad chachamos. He's a young guy. He didn't learn, you know, these kinds of skills. V'ivri im kein lo b'kol chakishuv. He's an ivri. We know that ivrim, they don't do witchcraft. V'eved gam kein lo nasan l'botei chachma. Right? There was no way he had schooling. V'im kein hu inyan Elohi. That's the point. Wow. He says that what the Sar HaMashkim is saying, this man is as a gift from God. And in fact, what did Yosef say to the Sar HaMashkim, the Sar of him? Not me, right? Not me, Elohim. Right? Well, Bilatai is what he says to Paro. Okay, but what he said to them was, I'll do my best, but it's going to be God. Okay? And so, and that's an important message, which he says, Kamoshi Yaduai Elohim Shemishpachas Evim Himalam Malami Teva Sharbani Adam. That's amazing. Okay, he's saying that their nature is that they are on a higher level, okay, than other people. And so there's a godliness which he's expressing to Paro, and Paro, you know, does accept that. So now I somehow cut off the pasuk number. So look at the next one, which is in bold, okay. And this is what I mentioned before. I mean, you don't have to see this, but we know that Paro made a number of changes. And so the Netziv says that there are a whole bunch of diukim that Paro changed, and things that Yosef discerned, which the Netziv went into more detail in explaining. I didn't want to get lost in it because it's just very technical. So, but I did want to draw to your attention that the Netziv does note that, and that Paro, of course, was aware as well that he was changing things. Okay. So after Paro tells over the dreams to Yosef, you look at the very bottom of the page, he concludes saying, "Va'omar al-chartumim ve'ein magidli," and I told it to my necromancers, I told it to my necromancers, and none of them were able to tell me what it means. So again, this is the point that he's drawing out again. The Chartumim, look at the end of the first line. Aval Chartumim shumaseh kishuv. Right? If they, with their magic, can't do it, then I need you with your godliness to do it. That's essentially what he's telling Yosef. And he's saying, this is why I trust you, because what the Sar HaMashkim told me was that you don't operate the way they operate. And this is an interesting to bear in mind, because, you know, later on, when the brothers come down, Yosef's going to make a comment about magic with his cup. Remember? So we have to be very careful about the way that Yosef speaks, because we know who Yosef is,
But the brothers don't know who Yosef is. And so Yosef is going to be very precise in the way that he speaks to give them an impression without actually telling them something which is incorrect or untrue. Okay, so we'll hold that thought. Next page, next pasuk. Vayomer Yosef el Paro, chalom Paro echad hu, asher elim osei gil paro. Okay, so we mentioned that part before, but look at the way Yosef's speech is described. Vayomer Yosef el Paro. Okay, later on, Yosef is going to say, where is it? Hu asher dibarti el Paro, asher elim osei, where is it? He gil the Paro. Okay, so Yosef, when he speaks the first time, he uses Lashon Amira, Vayomer, to say. And later on it says, Asher Dibarti. But he didn't Dibar. So look at the Nitziv here. Look what he says. Pasuk Chafei. Vayomer Yosef. Hayaroi Luftor B'Lashon Az. Right? When you're going to interpret a dream, you want to use a language of strength, right? Strength, you got to be confident. So, but Yosef speaks with an Amira. Why? Amira, we know, is Lashon Racha. So, look, skip to the second line. Ela Mishum Kvod HaMelech Hishpil Kolo Kmo Shemar Boker Ruach. That Yosef spoke softly because he was a king. He was a humble slave, a humble prisoner. Okay, Aval Achagach Amar Asher Dibarti, She'enu Amira Ela Dibur. In other words, Yosef has a switch because somewhere in the middle of it, he sees Paro softening. And this is just, you know, one of the incredible human interactions that we find in the Torah, where Paro looks at Yosef and he knows he's a slave, he knows he's a guy who's been in a jail, but somehow Paro sees Yosef and realizes this is the guy who's going to save my kingdom and save the world, really. And it is possible that the reason why Paro had that intuition was because that was also part of his dream. In other words, he knew that he had a dream and that it was going to be interpreted for him by somebody. So he's looking at all of his chartumim, and none of them are getting it. Yosef walks into the room, and he goes, wait a second, this is deja vu. Yeah, I've seen this before. And the answer is, in the dream. So when Yosef, but Paro needed to hear Yosef first speak, and start doing it for Yosef to be able to realize, wait a second, I don't have to be an Amira here. I'm about to be, like, I'm getting to exactly where I need to be, and I can have that confidence, that dibur, that Paro will give me the space to have. And immediately Paro switches, and that's something which Yosef is able to discern. And Yosef says, Eis asher Elohim osei, give the Paro, what God is going to be doing. And that's another reason why this was able to work, because Yosef is telling Paro that I'm coming from a godliness approach. The Nitziv describes here how there are two ways that people can interpret dreams. One is me'acharei pargod, right? In other words, it's behind God's fence. Versus the way your chartumim, your necromancers, usually discern dreams. He says that's ma'aseh shedim. That's done through their witchcraft and their sorcery. So, you know, you want, that's the, look at the middle of the last line there in that comment. He says achartumim yodim alidei shedim. So if they didn't get it from the shedim, from the demons, okay, through the underworld, then there's only one other way you can get a dream interpretation. And that's me. Now, again, he's not, Yosef's not saying it's me. He's saying you're getting it through who I'm being the messenger from. Okay? Yeah. And Paro totally gets it. So when Yosef says, Hu Adavar, Shedibarti, Rehi, Hu Adavar, what he's trying to tell, Hu Adavar, what's Hu Adavar? It's the last thing that Yosef said. The main message that's being told to you, Paro, is not about the Sheva Shnei Asova. It's not about the years of plenty. That's easy. You'll notice that right away. But what you're being told about is the famine, and that you have the opportunity to prepare. I cut off the last letter. It should have been Velo Asova in the line which is in bold. Velo Asova. God is telling you about the Ra'av, about the famine. So, when Yosef continues the pasuk Lamed Gimel and says Atah Yera Faroish Navon Chacham Shisei Al Eretz Mitzrayim, he says the Nitziv says Basher Yam Adaber Ruach Hakodesh Yera, right, because Yosef was speaking with Ruach Hakodesh, he had the Alkein Oyela Oz Lagid the Paro Mashachov Alav Lasos. I mean, the whole everything, Yosef is a mouthpiece for God here. So once he's feeling that power, so to speak, he has the confidence to be able to tell Paro what he needs to do. And of course, what Paro needs to do is appoint Yosef. Now, he doesn't say appoint me. He says, Yera Paro ish chacham v'navon, Right? Paro should appoint a wise and discerning individual, and Paro, you know, of course, goes right ahead and does so. If you look at Pasuk Lamed Ches, which is on next page, by Yomer Paro Lavadav, on page 228, Hanitzach Hazeh Ish Asher Ruach Elohim Bo, is there anybody who has like the Spirit of God in him? And look at the last line that Nitziv says at the top of the next page. Elo Ruach Elohim Bo, Sheyodea Kopi Ruach HaKodesh. Paro realizes and recognizes that that is what Yosef is. Yosef is a guy who has the Spirit of God, and he's speaking through that, and that Yosef is the mouthpiece for that Spirit of God. And this is the biggest Kiddush Hashem you can absolutely imagine. Okay, and look at the next line. Paro says, "Remember, Achrei Odia Elokim Oschas Kol Zos in Navonu Chacham Kamocha." Says, "You said that I need to have Ish Chacham V'Navon. Well, if God has given you all this, then there's nobody else like you that could fill this position." And the Nitziv basically describes why this is now going to be a perfect partnership. Let's read it inside. Pasuk Lamates. Mizei Yesh Lavin Shal Yadcha Yehem Yisnaheg Ha'inyan Anisgav Shlemus. It has to be done through your hands. That's why God gave it to you. I'd give you this information. Okay, Paro is basically saying, God put you, Yosef, in this position, and therefore you're the right guy to help me, but he put me in this position because I'm the one who has the power
to
make the whole thing happen. Okay, so it's not like a dream went to some Egyptian schnook. It went to the king, and it had to go to the king because the king has the manpower behind him, maybe even without having to pay people. I don't know. You know, he has that, and that is the message which he has. Look at skip to the end of the last long line. Ein lanu l'kavos l'ishi chalkel b'chachmo v'usvuna kamocha shvetzonan l'sayeh chabazeh. He says, I don't need to find somebody else. God wants you. And Paro says, I recognize that. What name does Paro give to Yosef? Vayikra Paro Shem Yosef Tzafnas Paneach. Tzafnas Paneach. So we know what the word Tzafnas means. It comes from the word Tzafun. Tzafun. Not Tzafet. Tzafun. Hidden. Right? We know that from the Seder. Right? Tzafun Le'afikoyman. But Paneach, he says, is a combination of two words. Take a look. I tried to make it a little more clear. Towards the end of the first line. Pei Aleph Mishore Shofa'a V'chavod.
What's Shofa'a?
No. That's Hafta'ah. Hofa'ah is something which is, you know, when they have a concert in Israel, sometimes they call it Hofa'ah, like, you know, big time event, right? Something which is big. So Hofa'ah is something special, v'chavod,
that that's who you are. You're like an honorable, and a person deserving of honor. V'nunchas milashon nachas v'oneg ha'nefesh, and you're going to bring, like, you know, essentially, like a calm and a peace to this land.
He gave him this name after he had raised him up and given and put him in a position where he's deserving of honor. But not only that, now you can get to what you said before. Mishum shenis spoil Paro. Paro was like overtaken in a sense from Koach's strength, and this is really a tremendous tribute to Yosef. Maybe it's, you know, through God. Through God's help, but look what he says.
Somebody who's been living in the utmost humility, what kind of and lowliness, what kind of life has Yosef had? He's been a slave and he's been in prison for the last 13 years. Okay? And now he's raised loftily to this huge position. It's very hard to navigate that kind of it's really, if you think about it, it's a crazy transition, right? There's no, it's the kind of thing that you want to build slowly. You know, Yosef, you want to be a king? Okay, so, you know, we'll get you out of the mailroom, right? And we'll put you into, right, in one thing or another. And then eventually you get to be a CEO. I just saw an article a couple weeks ago about a woman who became a principal of a school, and she started off as a janitor.
No way.
Okay, it's pretty cool. Okay, it's some inner city place, which is a fascinating story. But what does that mean? She was around education and this, then she took classes at night. Yeah, I mean, different things, and you build your way up. But Yosef's going from, you know, from this to, from nothing to everything. And people could just lose their minds or even die. And Paro sees that Yosef is, he's ready for this. Okay? He's ready for this, but not only that, look at the next line. I'll just continue from the bolt. Bari Paro Esher, Yosef, Mibes Asurim, Yotzen Loch, he came out of prison to be a king. Belonish Tanakocho, but his strength hasn't changed. Somebody who's been a slave has no idea how to be a leader. But Yosef did. But now, Yosef, unbeknownst to Paro, perhaps Yosef has a pretty impressive resume. He was a leader in Potiphar's house. He was a leader in the prison, right? Remember the prison guard put him on top of everything? So Yosef can do this, but from Paro's perspective, it's really quite impressive. Paro looks at Yosef and says, this guy does not hold himself like a slave. He is not a lowly, he's an impressive person. He says he's totally qualified. And Paro saw that in him, and you know, it's a credit to the whole story, really, the way that this plays out and how Yosef becomes what he is. Okay, so that's the end of that, and we're going to transition now to when Yosef's brothers come down. I mean, Yosef, of course, is elevated. I think we're pretty familiar. He's given a wife. He becomes a king, etc. 7 years of plenty. Yosef does what he has to do, and then in order to make it ready, and then the famine hits, and of course, the famine hits much further and much wider than we could have imagined. Okay, so now, let's see. In Perek Mem Beis, we see. Notice how we're told by Yar Yaakov ki yeshev b'Mitzrayim, by Yomer Yaakov levanav lo mitzro. Yaakov sees that there is food in Egypt, and he says to them, "Let's go. You guys are going to go down. Vishiv lo nimisham v'nechiyev lo namus, so that we will live and not die." Remember that phrase. It's important because it's going to come back. I mean, we're not going to. It doesn't focus on it so much in the way that I would have liked to have seen, but it doesn't matter. By Yerdu Achay Yosef Asarolish Bor b'Mitzrayim. So Yosef's 10 brothers go down. Okay, so Yaakov doesn't send Binyamin because he doesn't want anything to happen to him. Now that's strange. Why does it switch? It just said that Yaakov is sending, and then it switches and calls him Bnei Yisrael. Okay, so that's something which we're going to see in the Netziv, not on this pasuk, but we're going to see him jump on it in a little bit. A little bit trying to explain to us why there is a distinction made between Yaakov and Yosef. Now, in other words, obviously, he has both names. That's not the question. But is there a theme associated with the usage of the name Yisrael versus the name Yaakov? Could they be called Bnei Yaakov, for example? Yes, they can. I mean, I think we saw that in... Well, actually, Shechem is a bad example. That's prior to Beit El, so we'll leave that aside. Okay, but can they be called Bnei Yaakov? So the answer is they can be called Bnei Yaakov. And we would have to see. I didn't look through to see if they're sometimes called Bnei Yaakov versus Bnei Yisrael, because of course if that's the case, then that's a different thing, and that's a very easy understanding in terms of Bnei Yisrael being something about them as a group, perhaps, or as a nation. Okay, we'll leave that for what it is for now, but we'll see. We're going to get back to that. Pasuk says in Pasuk Gimel Vayirdu Achei Yosef Asara. So I have an issue with some of the things which the Netziv says here, because the Torah is telling us. The Netziv says, "Shatan is kayem achalam rishon shel Yosef shechalam." Right, that when the bundles bow down to Yosef, how many bundles bow down to Yosef in the Torah?
The ten brothers.
No? Okay, I asked that question correctly. How many bundles does the Torah say bow to Yosef's bundle?
11. I don't know.
Not 10. Oh, folks, it's a trick question. How many bundles does it say bow down to Yosef's bundle? It doesn't say a number. It just says, your alumos bowed to my alumos, but it doesn't say a number. It says a number for the stars, okay, 11 stars. It does not say a number. So I have an issue, okay? I mean, you'll see why I have an issue. Okay, so what he's saying is that when the brothers come down and they bow, that's the fulfillment of the alumos, because it's brothers. It doesn't matter, like a number doesn't matter, because the Torah didn't give a number. Right. So what happens afterwards? Look at what he says on Pasuk Dalet. As Benjamin lo yabechlal chalom al kain husavdas Yaakov lebeli shalcho, because Yosef didn't give a number, therefore Yaakov didn't send Benjamin. What? What is he talking about? Does he think that Yosef? Does he know that Yosef is alive in Egypt? Does he know that Yosef is a ruler? Does he know that they're going down to Egypt is going to be fulfillment of Yosef's dream? No. So I'm not sure what he means when he says al kain. I am honestly, I'm quite lost on that one. Okay, and that's one thing which is a problem. Look at the bold in the next line, because the next pasuk that we have to look at is pasuk test, top of the next page, 2, 3, 4. Vayizkor Yosef is achalamos shechalam lam. Right, Yosef sees his brothers and he remembers his dreams. Okay, so
So Yosef sees that his dream is, look what the Nitziv says. Sharei achalom arishon kvar niskayim, now that they have bowed down to him, first dream has been fulfilled. Bim kein, I love the rosh yukayam gam hasheni. So he needs to make sure that the second one takes place. Why? Why is that his job?
Right.
Not only that, we don't even know what the second dream meant.
Right.
Right? The only interpretation we heard is that Yaakov and the sons, and Yaakov and Yosef's mother are going to bow down to Yosef, which we know is nonsense because Rachel is dead. So what does that even mean? And why does he have to make it happen? Okay, so Yosef has the conversation with his brothers. He accuses them of being spies. They're like, no, we're not. And then they give a whole bunch of information to Yosef. Let's take a look at the things which they say to him. Starting with Pasuk Yud. They say, no, we are not. We are your servants. Okay, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Kolanu b'nei Yishecha nachtu. We're all the sons of one man. Keinim anachtu. We're telling the truth. We are not miraglim. We're not spies. And Yosef says, no, you are your spies. Pasuk Yud Gimel, they say to him, no, we are actually 12 brothers. Anachnu b'nei Yishechad, we're all the son of one man. In the land of Canaan, Beretz Canaan. V'nei akatonas avinu ayom, the youngest one is with our father today. V'ayachad, einenu, one of them is gone, one of them is missing. And Yosef says, oh, that's why I know you guys are a bunch of liars, you're a bunch of spies. B'zoz tibochenu, this is going to be the test. So by Paro's life, you will leave only when your younger brother is brought down here. Okay? So take a look at what Nitziv says. Pasuk Yud Aleph. He says the first thing that they're saying is that they were the son of one man. Okay? And how could it be? Right? How could it be that he would let them all leave unless we are all needed, right? The more of us that come down, the more food we can bring back up. So that's why we're all needed. Why would he let them all go if we're spies? Spies come from 12 different families. He's going to let his whole family go? If you'd wipe us all out, we're all dead. We have to be telling the truth. That's number one. So Yosef says, you think that's such a great proof? I still think that you've come to Lerosa. Or it's Pasuk Yud Gimel. That was Pasuk Yud Beis. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Now the Nitziv, even though he's already given one piece of logic, he actually starts counting the logic, okay, based on their next response. They come from Eretz Canaan, okay, and so the bottom on the Pasuk Gimel here he's saying is, if we came from Eretz Canaan is right next to you, you think Eretz Canaan needs to send a bunch of spies to see Ervas HaAretz, they can see you, all they need to do is look with their binoculars, they're right here. Okay, that's number one. Turn the page over, the Nitziv page. Bina Katon, second proof. Sharei Katon Shema. Okay, we're also not lying to you because all you need to do is send a messenger back to our house and you'll find that we're telling you the truth. Okay? Mm-hmm. Number three, Echad Einenu, third proof. Kasher Achinu Echad Einenu Imanu V'Efshar Shuv B'Mitzrayim. We came down here, we know that our brother was sold out to Egypt. We know that he's down in Egypt. So I don't have to mention that, but we know that he's down here. So there's no reason why we would come here and wipe out your entire nation, because then we'd be killing our own brother. So we're giving you information to let you know that we are not, in fact, dangerous. Okay, that's the first. That's the not the first, but it's a few points that he's trying to share. And in Yudalit, what?
They don't say that they're lost brother.
They don't say that, but the Nitziv is inferring from that they are trying to, you know, make a logical argument to defend their position. Their position is Echad Einenu, meaning he's gone from us. Hint, hint. He may be here, because we don't know where he is. But if he's here, we're not wiping this place out. Okay. In Pasuk Yudalid, the Nitziv says that's Yosef's response. He says, "I still think you guys are a bunch of liars. Your missing brother is a nice story. So the truth is, only the Katan, only your younger brother, can clarify the truth." So, you know, I can believe you or not believe you, but I need to clarify the truth. And so, therefore, that's what we are going to need to have take place. Okay, so we know what Yosef does. He tells them that you need to do that. And then on the top page 236, Pasuk Chaf, the brothers start fighting with each other. Okay, they say, we're guilty. I mean, I don't mean fighting like in a deep way, but they're kind of having remorse over what happened to Yosef. You know, it's terrible. We didn't listen to him, at the time. And who responds? Reuven. And Reuven says, I told you guys, don't sin with him. And so, you know, what do we know about Reuven? From back in Parshas Vayeshev, when Yosef was sold, who was definitely not present?
Reuven.
Okay, we know that. So, even though I mentioned last week that it's possible that the brothers did not sell Yosef, but in some way they may have been involved, okay? But who was not involved? Reuven was not involved, for sure. And so if Yosef had taken a look around and his brothers were present at the time, you know, irrespective of the Midianim presence, being present and everything, so he would have known that Reuven wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And that Reuven not being there would indicate that Reuven is telling the truth here. And in fact, Reuven says this, and the Pasuk says that they didn't know that Yosef understood what he was saying because he had been speaking to them through an interpreter.
But
so
did Reuven leave the group after Yosef was put in the pit? There was no way Yosef could know that Reuven was not present thereafter.
No, if he had been taken out, when Yosef had been taken out, Reuven was not present at the time of the sale because he would have stopped it. Correct, correct, and that's an assumption which we're going to make. At least, okay, I don't know that we need to make it, but the Netziv is making it, and so with the Netziv, we'll see why that's important later on. Okay, but the fact that Reuven is saying, "I told you guys, don't sin with him," and you didn't listen. Okay, and now his blood. Now Reuven doesn't know what happened to Yosef. Okay. You know, if the brothers sold him, then they may have told Reuven, or maybe they didn't tell Reuven. You know, they may have seen, you know, Reuven, we're not sure we can trust Reuven, because we were planning to kill him, and Reuven said no. So they sold him without Reuven's presence. So it's a good question regarding Reuven. Was Reuven a loser in that he didn't take Yosef when he should have, and that he wasn't involved? Or was Reuven really trying to demonstrate leadership, but he just... He didn't, you know, maybe he just didn't do it to the top degree. So here,
the one who said before they threw him even in the pit.
Correct, right, and before Yosef was even there. Wow. So here, right. So Yosef goes away from them. So he returns to them and he speaks to them. Well, what did he say to them? Okay, and that's the question which is being raised by the Netziv here. And so Netziv says in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, "Sheyitnu biyado echad mehem," that he told them that they should give them one, and they didn't want to do it. And he starts talking about the halachic question about whether if the enemies say, "Give us so and so," whether you're allowed to give them over. They couldn't decide who they're going to do, and so therefore Yosef took Shimon. And look at the middle of the second line, "Shileim lahem b'mida." He was paying them back. Why? Because when Shimon originally said, "Let's kill him," okay, who objected to that?
No.
Well, really, nobody originally, okay. He stepped in later, so no one stopped Shimon when he said this, and so he says no one's going to object to Shimon being taken away. Okay, that's Mida Kenegan Mida. It's assumed. Because it says Ish Elohim. It doesn't say that it was Shimon, but that's what Rashi says. Okay, now, okay, so that's what we get here. That's the Mida Kenegan Mida. So we know that Shimon is gone, and of course Yosef is still missing. Okay, so now we're going to move in the narrative to Pasuk Lamed Vav, where they come back. When they come back, they tell their father what has transpired. And one of the things which Yaakov says to them here, "Vayomer Alihem Yaakov Avihem." Let's read Pasuk Lamed Vav. Yaakov says to them. Now, note how Alihem is written. How, if you had to write the word Alihem, how would you have written it? Yes, with a yud. So Yaakov says to them, "Osem shikalta." You guys, I mean, you totally messed up. Yosef einenu. Yosef's gone. Shimon einenu. Shimon's gone. Ves Benjamin tikachu. You're going to take Benjamin. Alayu yichulana. I mean, it's all falling apart on me. Now we saw a different interpretation for Alay last year or 2 years ago. I think with the Ksava Kabbal. I don't remember what it was. But he translated the word Alay, I think, in the word Siba. It's all because of the. I don't want to. This is. We're going to focus on the Siv. So look what he says. Alehem, Chaser, Siv Chaser. Shalodi bari imahem panim panim. Yaakov was not talking to them. Yaakov is talking really kind of about them. Lemor lahem, that somebody should say to them, "Osi shikalan, you guys have totally messed me over." Because now he's really suspicious that they killed Yosef. That they should understand and recognize that Yaakov suspects that they are not playing kosher. They think that they killed Yosef. Yaakov thinks that they killed Yosef, and that they killed Shimon.
Did the Avos have Nebuah?
Yes, but obviously not about everything.
But this was like luck.
Okay, not about this. Alai Yichulana Diber Bifnei Atzmo Bilashon Istar. He spoke in code. Kol Banai Alai Ayul Tzari Lamareres Chayei. All my sons are just a source of bitterness and pain for me. B'mashem Iskodadim, because they fight at Shaharagim L'Besovas until they kill one another. It's killing him. It's because this is what he sees. Every time you guys leave en masse, you come back missing somebody.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Right. What kind of family is this? And he's worried it's going to happen again. Oh, you know, sorry, we lost Shimon. It's everything. Okay?
Yeah.
So Reuven, of course, and this is why I gave you like a little hint about Reuven before. Yomer Reuven el aviv lemor, shenei banai tamisim lo avi enu elecha, tenoa sol yadai v'ani yeshiv enu elecha. Okay, so Reuven says, my sons will tamis. Okay, which means you will die. Now, I saw an interpretation this year. I don't remember where I saw it, but where he said that, the commentary said that Reuven is saying that you'll write him out of your will, which I like. Because what Reuven is saying really doesn't make any sense. Like, Yaakov, you can kill my sons. You know, Yehuda, of course, makes a different offer because Yehuda has had two sons die, Er and Onan, as we know from last week's Parsha. So he gives a different offer. And the Midrash jumps on Reuven and says, you're such a shoyte. Like, what kind of offer is this? That, oh, in exchange for my having lost Yosef and if you want to say Shimon, and now Binyamin, you're going to lose two sons? Like, that doesn't really help me. I don't want my grandchildren to die. So look at what he says. Hu betach yoter mikol achim. That he is trustworthy more than other brothers. Reuven knows he wasn't involved in the sale of Yosef. And there is no punishment coming to him from the hands of heaven for having sold his brother. Okay, but if he takes responsibility with the other brothers, then all bets are off. Because the brothers, they have no merits going for them with regard to watching over a brother. But for Reuven, yes. So take a look at the end of the third line. This is a good idea because Yosef had no ill will towards Reuven. So if Reuven steps up and says, I took responsibility, Yosef would have to say, now Reuven doesn't know that it's Yosef, so that's not what it means. What it means is that the merit of Yosef, or a demerit of the sale of Yosef, is not over Reuven's head. But Yaakov didn't know about it. So it doesn't help. It doesn't help. Correct. Correct. So, right. So I'm not even going to go there. I spoke about that on Shabbos. Okay. Eshnei banai tamis. So, what he says here, the way I understand it is, if you look at the last line, basically what Reuven is saying is, obviously Reuven doesn't want his own sons to die either. What he's saying is, there is no way that I'm going to let anything happen to Binyamin.
What Hebrew word does he use for slay or die?
Tamis.
Tamis.
That you can have die.
Tamis. You can kill.
I mean, you can, right. It doesn't say tarog, but you know, tamis. Okay. What? The way that I'm understanding it is that, here, I mean, you can read it. Zelav tachal Yaakov. It's a promise to Yaakov. V'shesavar she'achim chayavim b'dvar Shimon gam kein. He thought the brothers were also, you know, responsible for what happened to Shimon. V'im kein mistam Reuven agadol shebuchulam yodo b'zeh. So Yaakov felt that Reuven was responsible, and so Reuven's responsible for Shimon and for Yosef, and that's what he's offering him. Basically saying, you can get me back. But I think, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but what I think he's basically saying is that there's no way I'm going to let anything happen to him. Okay, I mean, it's not going to, because the last thing that I would want is for my kids to die. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving you the most crazy situation, because I will never let it come to that.
It's like going from the frying pan into the fire, from one light.
Okay, all right. So, in any case, Yaakov doesn't accept it, and only when Yehuda comes along in the next chapter, which is the next few psukim, he says we have to go down with Binyamin. And he goes and he reminds his father what happened. The man asked us, and we told him, and whatever. So, let's see. Pasuches, Vayomer Yehudel Yisrael Aviv, Shelcha Nariti, Venakuma Venelecha. He says, send the boy with me, Venakuma Venelecha, Venechiev Velonamus. Remember how Yaakov had said, you go down to get food, so we should live and not die? Yehuda's throwing that back at him and saying, we really need to take Binyamin so that we will live and not die. Gamanachdu, Gamatel, Gantapenu, so all of us. Anochiyar Venom Yadid Tabakshenu, so Yehuda basically swears by his own life that I'm going to take responsibility. And so Yaakov accepts it and they go down. So, but look at Pasuk Vav, right? Vayomer Yisrael Lamar Yosemli. So now we have Yisrael before Yaakov was communicating with them. Look at the Nitziv. Tziv Kan Shem Yisrael. So this is a message for all time. This you're going to love. Okay? Asher you begalus when you're going to be in exile. And you're going to be judged in front of whoever subjugating you. Don't offer up more information than is necessary. Who are you? We're people from Canaan. What's your connection? We're brothers. Okay. Is there another one? I mean, he didn't ask you that question. Why'd you offer that information? Okay? Don't give more information. El Yisrael of Impirish and Mikrokan, El Yisrael, Shamarlo Belev Nachon, She'elo Pachad Mikolo Fane Pachadim. Okay, he's talking to his father saying that I have no fear of anybody. Vashir Butech B'Shem Yisrael. He's talking about his father Yisrael because what does Yisrael mean? Sarisa Im Elohim Anashim. Yehuda is saying, I do not fear this man. He is not going to get the upper hand in terms of Binyamin.
Wow.
Okay? Next page.
Vayomer
Alehem Yisrael Avihem. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Again, Alehem is without a Yud. And again, it's Yisrael who's speaking. Look what the Nitziv says. Ksiv Yisrael Mishim Shema Baruch HaKodesh Lagid L'Doros. Again, he's saying it's Yisrael. So here what you see is Yisrael is utilized when Yaakov is speaking, because he's speaking not just to his sons, but to future generations. That's the Nitziv's explanation.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if you can test it and see if it's always the case, but certainly in these cases that I highlighted, it is true. Kibigalus, if you're in exile, if you are being judged by the master there, Gambit said, come, even if you're right, bring them a gift. Right, an offering, not a bribe, an offering. And that's why it's Aleihem Chaser to tell us. He's not only speaking to them, he's speaking to Mishum Shalo El Banav Levadaber Diber El Ludoros V'yegia Mizeh Gam Lahem. Okay, so we need to learn that lesson as well.
Rabbi, the Aleihem without
the
Yud, what
are you? The Aleihem without the Yud, the Nitziv's point when Aleihem is said without a Yud is that it's a draw to attention, that he's not either he's not speaking to them at all, which is what we saw the first time, that he was talking either to people who were telling them, or he was speaking aloud and they should get the message. Okay?
So it's not direct.
Not direct or not only to them.
Yeah, right.
Okay? But the point that the missing yud is a draw to attention that it's not just a message to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In whatever way that he's communicating it. Okay. All right. Now, so they come down, and when Yosef sees Binyamin, he treats them very nicely. I mean, he gives them a very warm welcome. He brings them to his house. They eat together. He gives them all gifts. He gives. I'm sorry. Is that the gifts after he reveals himself? Maybe he gives. Maybe he favors Binyamin after he gives them after he reveals himself. Okay. But anyway, but he's very nice to them, and they eat together, etc. And he talks about their father. Right, shalom lechem. Where is it? They told him that he brought back the money. They said, "Don't worry about it. It's fine. You can keep it." And okay, page 244, top of page. So there's that mincha that Nitziv mentioned. And so they come to Yosef's house, they bring him the gift. He asks them, how are you doing? How's your elderly father that you mentioned? Is he alive? Yeah, he's alive. Okay. Take a look now. So, So the end of this, the end of Pasuk Chavav comment is the one which I again I just struggle with because I the Nitziv keeps jumping back and forth. He said, "Ki kol echad enem zed kan niskayim pitaron hachalom v'hinei tisu ben al moseichem." Right now that Binyamin's there, all the brothers are bowing, and that's the fulfillment of the dream of the bundles.
Didn't you say that before?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm troubled by it because he already said that happened, and we already noted that Binyamin didn't need to be present because there wasn't a number given in that dream. So I don't know. Now we have to read Pasuk Chav Zayin.
Fine.
Okay, so that's why you got to read. That's why you got to read what's coming. Okay, now let's take a look. We're going to read Chav Zayin inside, so you can push the Chumash aside for a second, and we're going to read this together. Okay, Perush Hamefarshim Temua. Yosef asks about your father. Is he still alive? Chada de im kain. I'm not sure what it was. Okay. Basically, Yosef had already asked this question when they came back down. Why are you asking if he's still alive if you've already asked if there's peace to him, which means that he's alive? You know that he's alive. Okay. Hashalom avichem, peace to your father, means it's like Hashalom Zimri, Hashalom Yehu, Demashma, oh, imata shalom imadi, oh, hinechabaroges. Are you at peace with me, or are you mad at me? Kach sha'alam, Hashalom avichem. He's asking, what's the status of your father? Im eino b'ka'as alai, if he's not angry with me, alikichas ben zekunim shalom. Right? How does he feel about this? Yalzeh shivu b'chachma shalom le'avdech. And so they responded to him properly, shalom La'avdcha v'yamru shalom la'avdcha v'avinu, which is not just that he's okay, harehu avdcha. So it has nothing to do with how Yaakov really is. What they're saying to him is that he's your servant, right? And so how could a servant, ech yichos o yargiz al adon, right? A servant does never.
The father Yaakov?
They're saying about Yaakov that he's your servant.
Yeah.
And a servant never gets angry at his master, right? He can't. He loves his master, right?
He has to. Always right.
So don't ask about his shalom, just ask if he's healthy. That's what it means. They ask if Yosef had asked if he's still alive. They're not asking. Yosef's not asking if he's actually alive versus dead. He already knows that.
No.
He wants to know if he's healthy and strong. So they said he is. But they didn't really understand what Yosef's intent with the question was. But Yosef had an intent, and he got the information that he needed. Because now you can ask the question, why is Yosef giving the further difficulty to his brothers with the Gaviyah? In other words, the second dream with the 11 stars has already been fulfilled. Okay, I, the son of the moon, okay? So he felt that the son bowing was his father, and he felt that that was still missing. And he thought, now if I can manipulate the cup thing to make Binyamin stay here, so I asked this question at the outset. Is Yosef really supposed to make this happen? So Yosef, the Nitziv's view is that Yosef felt that if he can make it, that Binyamin will stay down here, his father is strong enough to handle that Binyamin is missing, but he'll also be mobile, he'll mobilize to get down here himself. Right? And Yosef was going to stick with that plan until Yehuda says to him in next week's parsha. After Yehuda said what he said.
He wouldn't have put it into play if he knew he wasn't well enough to.
Right, exactly. So when Yehuda says to him that if we get back to Binyamin, if we get up, rather back to Yaakov, and Binyamin is not with us, then he's going to die. Mm-hmm. And that, at that point, Yosef realized it's not going to happen that way.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to get my father down here, but it has to be done much more delicately. So he says that the dream was actually fulfilled through the mincha. In other words, the mincha came from Yaakov. That's how Yaakov bowed to Yosef. That's what he says. Yeah, then it's him.
Yeah.
Kind of glosses over that one, and that's why I have a problem with this, because I don't really... Right, so, yeah, exactly.
Good point.
Okay, look at the next one. Pasuk Chavches, he continues with this one. Vayigdu v'yishtachavu. So, I'll say reponim yafos, shechoshesh l'chiyos aviyem, o shechtachavu b'shem aviyem, since they bowed in their father's name, v'nizkayim kanachalom shechtachavu eshashemesh. Okay, so you don't like it, you can take it up with the Nativ. I'm just sharing with you what he said.
He's breaking up the second dream.
Yes, I understand.
Shemesh is one,
okay.
Moon is next.
Yeah. Okay, now I like Chavtes because in Chavtes, I mean, you know, they keep on talking about Binyamin as a katon and a nar. Now Yosef knows how old, right? Yosef knows how old Binyamin is. So the Nitziv says, "Hazeh achichem aketon asher martem." Yosef's playing along. He's like, "Oh, this is the little guy. I thought he was a little kid." I mean, the way you presented him, "Heinu martem ki al yidei achakatan nuchal v'aremes." Through the little guy, we can bring him. He's not a little kid. We come back him. He said he doesn't have anything on them. They did what they did. So Yosef is playing with them, is what he's essentially saying. Okay, you know, thank you, Shkayach, guys. But I think we could figure this out. Okay. So now we get to, bring the parsha to the conclusion, we get into Perek Mem Dalet, and Yosef says to his people, put the money back in their bags. The Nitziv, by the way, makes a distinction between the Sakim and the Amtachos. Okay, what is the Maleis Amtachos Anashim? He makes a distinction. I don't remember why he. I mean, I.
Sacks versus knapsacks.
So he makes a distinction between them. But anyway, I think he says one of them carries more food, one of them carries less food, one might be a backpack. Yeah, I mean, whatever. So, but I didn't focus on that. I wanted to get to the part which I did focus on, of course, which is what I hinted to at the outset. If you look at pasuk. Dalid. So Pasuk Dalid, after he had hidden the thing, you know, the cup in Binyamin's bag and sent them out, he sent his men after them to ask them why did they return the favor negatively. The cup which our master drinks from, and he does witchcraft with it. Hare Osem Asher Asisem. You've done really bad what you've done. Okay, now, does Yosef do witchcraft with it? Who said that he does witchcraft with it?
No.
His servants said it. Okay, yeah. They're telling a lie. But the point is that they have to create this image. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Let me rephrase. This is not what they said yet. This is Yosef telling them what they're supposed to say. Because in pasuk vav, vayasigeim, vayidaber aleim esadvarim ha'ela, they caught up to them and they told them. Vayomru elav, lama yidaber adonika advarim ha'ela. So there, it's actually telling them, one of those unique instances where the Torah, instead of repeating everything, just says that they said what he said to say. Okay, and doesn't repeat what Yosef had told them to say. And so the brothers respond to that saying, no, we would never do something like that, that's crazy. So, wherever you find the cup, that person will die, and the rest of us will be your slaves. So they find it. And then, next page, they come back, and what does Yosef say to them? Pasuk Tesvav, by Yomer Lahem Yosef, page 248. Ma Hamaaseh Azeh Asher Hashem. What's this thing that you've done? Haloi Datem. Don't you know Kinachesh Inachesh Ish Asher Kamoni? Don't you know this witchcraft which is done by a guy like
me, not me.
You like
not
that?
Me.
Okay, you like that. Okay, so look at the Nitziv here. Okay. So on Pasuk Dal, he says, why did you return this favor negatively to steal something from this house that was so nice to you? Right? I mean, again, they're playing a role in trying to create an image of what Yosef is. Pasuk Tezvav in the Nitziv, this is where Yosef was speaking. It's not respectable for him to say that he did them favors. So he
he had to appease them over the suspicion. And he doesn't say anything about their touching on his honor. Because the end of the day, right, what's the rule about a melech? Melech shemach la kvodo?
Ain
kvodo machul. He can't set aside his honor. But the fact of the matter is, Yosef is not a melech, and so he's allowed to be mochel on his kavod. Aval ikshal ashtuz sha'asu alo yidatem. But he's questioning, like, don't you guys know that you shouldn't be messing with me? Ish asher kamoni, so I pointed that out, that he's not admitting to his having done witchcraft. He does not do witchcraft. So in Pasuk Tazayin, Vayomer Yehuda Ma'ano Mar La'Adoni Ma'ano Damer Ma'ano Tzadok. Yehuda says, what can we say, what can we speak, and how can we justify? So look at Pasuk Tazayin. So it mentions, Ve'amar Yehuda Ma'ano Mar. I'm in the third line, towards the end of the line. Yehuda first speaks, V'lashon Racha, right, in that language of softness. Manet Daber, V'lashon Az, what can we speak with the strength? Umanet Tadok, V'charitzus, Lohochiach, V'chol Ikra Masa, Enu Alilah. He's really firm now, saying that, you know, what, this is all crazy. How could anything like this have happened? It's conspiracy, can happen, it's, right? Look at the last line there. But if this is God's will, then that's why he says, Elohim atzah sabon avdecha. If this is what's supposed to happen, you know, Yehuda may be feeling this is all payback for whatever we did back in the time. And that's what is going to move Yehuda to give a speech that he gives at the beginning of the next parsha. Let's take a look at this last comment on the page, but we really have to do everything that I gave you. Okay, so we're gonna go through this and the top, very top of the next page. The Pirkei Avos says that somebody who cancels the Torah out of wealth is going to lose it out of poverty. And it's not specifically for the sin of Bittul Torah. Do I didn't call the bar aver shadam osa litzano sofa shivolide osa aver negative litzano. Right, they lost their brother for money, and now they're going to lose their brother, you know, in a way which is the opposite of having money as slaves. Akein chashav Yehuda ki b'asher asu avom b'masher chikus es Yosef me'aviyam b'ritzonam. So Yehuda is just trying to do a cheshbon, trying to figure this out. They purposely distance Yosef from their father in their own will. Matza elohim avom kazeh lavi l'adam rov tzar v'yagom. So God is getting them back in the most painful way. Hey, Nemes, Shimkein, Im Heim Chatu, Binyamin Machata. Says, we sin, but what did Binyamin do? Aval Yaldua, Mama Ramazal, Parachovel, Achovel, Bade Hotse Lucky Karava, Shimkein, Ikrachet, Baonish, Walihem, Binyamin Loki Mahem. Says, the sin is on you guys, but Binyamin is going to fall in your punishment, and it's your fault. Akain, Yehuda is saying, so we are also going to, you said that Binyamin is going to be your slave? Us too. It has to be us too. Negadine Amosha, that goes against your will, against the rule that you just said. He says, we are all accomplices. As we said, whoever, you find the cup in his hand, and us too, we'll all be servants. Negadine Shemayim. We didn't sin to you. So we understand that this is all coming full circle to us. That Binyamin never sinned, and yet he's being punished. What should you have done? He should have said, "Over my dead body, you're not taking Binyamin," and he should have died. But Yehuda said, "What's the point of that?" He says, "If this is God's will, that's what he says. That's what he says in the pasuk. If this is God's will, there's no sense in my dying. I may as well be a slave with him, as we said." With a dagish in the second nun, which is odd. Okay, below. Hinenu means we are, it's like hineni.
Not behold, we are slaves, but he meant, I'm up for it. This is what I want. This is my destiny. This is what I have to be. And there's no trickery here. We want to be here because there is no other place that we need to be. They're accepting God's will, which is an incredible step. There is a little more, as he already noted, that Yosef needs to find out what Yaakov thinks of what happened to Yosef. And so the Netziv already mentioned that Yehuda says that if our father comes down, he will die. But the other thing which Yosef is going to hear is that our father believes that Yosef is dead, which is a fascinating point that Yosef may not have considered. Because Yosef may have thought that there was a conspiracy to get him sold into slavery, but that his father thought he was dead is something which Yosef may not have ever considered. So hearing that as well may be another reason why he reveals himself. Chalil ali me'asosos, Yosef says, right? The greatest cliffhanger in the Torah. Every time I taught this parsha to kids, and I said, Yosef says, no. The one who had the cup, he's going to be my slave, and the rest of you guys can go home. End of parsha, children. What? I mean, he's a best cliffhanger. Best cliffhanger. Okay, take a look. Second to last word in the second line. Okay, when Yosef plays his card here, this is why Yehuda has the inspiration to give a speech to Yosef Ayyad. He says, this is not actually coming from God. Yosef, if this is all God's doing, Yosef should accept his offer. I mean, it's a win-win for Yosef. What does he care about? Gets more slaves. Yehuda, you know, some of them are clearly older and stronger than Binyamin, or, I mean, whatever, maybe not. Binyamin is 30. But it's a win-win. But he doesn't accept it. And so Yehuda is saying, wait a second, if this is not coming from God, then maybe there's something that needs to be done to turn him. It's this guy. So if it's not God's will, then maybe I can turn this guy. Or maybe Binyamin in fact is a sinner, and it's Binyamin who needs to go through this process. Binyamin needs to be purged from this sin. Yehuda should have given up his life, but he accepted it as God's will. Now that he sees that it's not coming from God, but it's coming from the ruler who's in front of him, Yehuda says, okay, now I have to promise, I have to fulfill my promise to my father. I got to do whatever I can to get Binyamin out of this.
Wow.
And what did Aravenu mean? I will take his place. Yeah, right? I will take his place. So you lose me, that's fine. As long as Binyamin gets back. So that's where Yehuda comes in when he is able to make that distinction between, is this God's will or is this your will, Mr. Ruler? And if it's your will, Mr. Ruler, then we can take that cliffhanger and run with it, and I can save my brother.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.